Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, rising above our emotions to do what's right. This is 1 Samuel 19, 1 through 11. Sometimes we know what the right thing to do is, but our emotions just get the better of us, and we just can't do the right thing. Maybe we've been trying to control ourselves for a long time, but eventually it just comes out. It's like, I've done the best I can to suppress this, but I can't do anything else. But eventually, willpower alone is not going to be good enough. We can't just remove that negative feeling or action. We have to actually replace it with the right one. Otherwise, we're just empty. And then the thing that we've been wanting to do that we've been suppressing this entire time is just going to come back bubbling to the surface. And so I think some of the reason that we fall into this trap is because we think that all we can control is our actions. And so by just saying, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, eventually it's like, yeah, I'm just going to do it. But the good thing is that we also have control over our thoughts and even our own feelings. We do have control over those things. It's like an endless loop. Our mind, body, and spirit are all connected. And so our thoughts influence our feelings, and our feelings influence our actions, and then our actions also influence our thoughts. And so it's just this continuous cycle. And on any part of that circle, we do actually have control. And so I want to prove to you that this is an actual biblical concept before we move on. And so in Matthew 9:4, Jesus asked the people why they were thinking evil in their hearts. And your heart is just a symbol of your feelings. And so that is saying that their evil thoughts are making them feel evil things. And so he's saying, why are you doing that? Meaning you can control that. And then in Luke 6:45, it says out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so that is saying that out of the abundance of what you feel, you will eventually say. And so when we fuel those feelings, then eventually they will grow so big, they will be so abundant that they'll just come bubbling out either of our mouths or in our actions. And then in Proverbs 16:3, it says that if we will commit our works to the Lord, then our thoughts will be established. So what that's saying is if you will just decide to do the right thing and commit to doing the right thing, then God will make you think more like the thing that you're supposed to do. And so this is a continuous cycle. And at every point, we have control. And the reason I'm talking about this today is because King Saul had this continuous battle between what he wanted to do and what he should do. He had this battle between his emotions and his reason. And eventually, jealousy won out. And so today we're going to talk about Saul and this continuous battle that he was in and how he lost this battle. And then how maybe we cannot lose the battle between our emotions and our reason, between the things that we want to do and the things that we should do. And so remember that in the last week or two, we've been talking about how Saul used to like David, and then David became too popular. The people began to like David too much. It says that the people said that Saul had conquered thousands and David had conquered tens of thousands. And Saul obviously did not like this. And so he has been in the past several chapters trying to send David out to battle in order to get killed. That way he doesn't have to worry about him anymore. And he didn't get his hands dirty, right? But none of that is working because every successive battle he sends David out to, David is more victorious, and that makes him more popular and the people like him more and more. So his plan is backfiring on him. And so we'll find out today that he's done with all of that. He's done with the behind the scenes, and he's decided to just come right out and, you know, kill David. He's done with it. And so I'm going to begin reading in 1 Samuel 19, the first 11 verses. And it says, Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, and said that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And so Jonathan told David, Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Therefore, be on your guard in the morning. Stay in a secret place and hide yourself. I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you. If I learn anything, then I will tell you. And so Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and he said to him, Let not the king sin against his servant David, because David has not sinned against you, and because his deeds have brought good to you. For he took his life into his hands, and he struck down the Philistine. And the Lord worked a great salvation for all of Israel. You saw it, and you rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without cause? So notice that the first thing that Jonathan does is say, David is innocent. And then he says, not only has he not done anything bad, but look at all the good things that he's done. And then he just slips in, and not only did he do good these good things, but it seems that God is working through him to do these good things. So if you don't do it for, you know, David's sake, then you should do it for your own sake, because he's been good to you as a king. And if you don't do it for your own sake, then you should do it for righteousness' sake, because God likes David. So he says all of that, and then he goes back to him and he says, are you really going to kill an innocent man? And it says that Saul listened to his son Jonathan, and he swore to him, saying, as the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death. And so Jonathan called David, and he reported to him all of these things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as before. So poor David, right? Because he knows that Saul wants to kill him, and now Jonathan's just like, never mind, he changed his mind, come on back. I would be like, I'm not real sure about that. Like, great, he doesn't want to kill me, but I think I would prefer to just not go back as if everything is fine, you know, because who knows? But he does. David goes back, and it says, then there was war again. And David went out, and he fought with the Philistines, and he struck them down with a great blow so that they fled before him. And then a harmful spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with a spear in his hand. And David was playing his lyre. So same as it's always been before. Saul gets this, you know, distressing spirit, and David comes to play the harp for him and make it go away. But it doesn't make Saul feel better this time. The music is not helping him, because David is the one playing the music, and David is the one that is making him feel this way in the first place. And so it says in verse 10, Saul sought to pin David to the wall with a spear, but he eluded Saul so that he struck the spear into the wall, and David fled and escaped by night. And then in verse 11, it tells us that Saul sent messengers to David's house to kill him at daybreak. And so Saul, you see this back and forth the whole time. He has been trying to get him killed passively this entire time. Now he's decided, I don't care anymore, I'm going for it. Remember though, also, he has at one time, he impulsively decided to kill David himself, but then he didn't advertise it to the world. You know, he kind of suppressed that. So he's been trying to passively kill him. That didn't work. One other time, he threw his spear at him just out of anger. But when David ran away that time, he's like, yeah, that was a bad idea. I need to stop that. I'm going to keep trying to send him out to war. Well, when none of this works, he tries to tell Jonathan and his servants, yeah, I'm going to kill him. So he just outright premeditated, done with the impulsivity, I'm going to do this. But when Jonathan, you know, confronts him about it, he's like, that's right. David has done good things for me. I'm wrong to be jealous of him and want to kill him. And so I'm going to just, you know, not do this. But then whenever the whole situation that made him upset with David in the first place comes up again, he's like, yeah, I'm done. I'm going to kill him. And so when he throws his spear at him this time, instead of letting David go and it being an impulsive action, since he has premeditated it already before, it's real easy to stick with it once he has gone through this impulsive action and just say, yeah, I'm done. I changed my mind. I'm going to do it. I'm going to follow through with the sinful action that I've been thinking about all of this time. And so my question to you is, have you ever been so overcome with emotion that even though you knew something was wrong, you just couldn't keep yourself from doing it? It's like, I don't care anymore. I don't care if it's wrong, I'm doing it. And again, I'm not talking about being impulsive. We all impulsively think certain things, feel certain things, do certain things. I'm asking about this continuous push and pull between what is right and what you want to do. This is a normal human reaction. And so God wrote in the Bible multiple times that this was a normal human reaction so that we wouldn't feel guilty about it when we feel it. We would just recognize that this is normal. People do this, and then we would do something about it. And so we don't need to let this, you know, draw us away from God or feel ashamed. We just need to recognize it and then address it. And so in Galatians 5:17, it says, for the flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit lusts against the flesh, where these things are contrary to one another, so that we do not do the things that we wish. And then Paul told the Romans this in chapter 7 of Romans, verses 14 all the way to 25. He says, for we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal. I am sold under sin. Because what I am doing, I don't understand. For what I want to do, that I don't do. But what I hate, that is what I'm doing. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good. But now it is no longer I who do it, but the sin that lives in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I can't find. So he's like, I know what's right, but I can't seem to do it. For the good that I will to do, that I don't do. But the evil that I don't want to do, that is what I keep doing. If I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that evil is present with me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man. So in my heart, I delight in God's law, but I see another law in my members, one that is warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity of the law of sin, which is in my members. So he's saying, in my heart, I want to do what God wants me to do, but then in my head, I want to do what I want to do. And so these two things are always warring against one another. Oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, with the mind, I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. So he's saying, thank you for Jesus, because you're the one that delivers me from this, because I cannot do this myself. And so all of us have this war within ourselves. And in Jeremiah 17:9, it says that the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. So we know that we can have bad feelings. Our heart can lead us astray. And then in James 1:14-15, it says, each one of us is tempted when we are drawn away by our own desires and enticed. Our desires pull us away from what we should want to do. And it says, then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. And so we know that there's this constant push and pull, that our desires carry us away. And so how do we avoid this? How do we avoid letting our emotions win this constant battle? The answer is, whichever one of them we feed the most is going to grow the strongest. And so if we want to overcome our emotions, then we have to starve them and we have to feed the thing that is right. We have to focus on the right things. In 2 Corinthians 10:5, it says, "We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." And so, if we want to win this battle, then we have to take control of the situation. And so we know that our feelings can be deceiving, but we also know that sometimes our feelings are valid and it's our reaction to the feelings that's wrong. And so what we first have to do is determine, do we need to be starving our feelings or do we need to be starving our reaction to those feelings? And the best way to do that is to look at it from a different perspective. If you're dealing with a relational situation, then look at it from that person's perspective. Like Jonathan was trying to get Saul to do when he was saying, David is innocent. That's the first thing. He hasn't done anything wrong. So you have no reason to feel wrong things towards him because he doesn't deserve your feeling towards him. And then telling him, hey, he risked his life for this nation. He's been good to you as a king. God is working through him. So that is what Jonathan was doing, is he's trying to get Saul to look at it from a different perspective. And if we do this, if when we're in that situation, we can look at it from the other person's perspective, or if we're just looking at a situation that we don't like and we can look at it objectively and, you know, kind of take our feelings out of it for a moment and just look at it from a different point of view. And if when we do that, we realize, yeah, I should not be feeling this way. This is not the way that I should feel about this situation. Then we just have to constantly remind ourselves of the things that we know are right and true, you know, the actual facts and the truth about the situation, and then try to replace that with the correct way of feeling. And that is, again, what Jonathan was doing. He was saying, not only is David innocent, but he has done all these good things. Not only did he not do bad things, but he did all of these good things. And so what Saul should have done is said, I shouldn't be feeling jealous towards him because that is wrong. He hasn't done anything for me to feel that way towards him. Instead, I should be feeling grateful to him. I should be thankful instead of jealous. And if he can continuously tell himself that, then eventually all of those feelings of hatred and anger and jealousy will fade, and instead he will feel grateful. And that gratitude will grow back into love, right? Because he used to love David. And so if he can just remind himself of the reasons that he loves David and starve the reasons that he's jealous of David and he hates him and wants to kill him, then he won't want to kill him anymore. He'll love him and he'll want him to be around, and he'll want to be around him. He'll want to send him to war, not so he will die, but so he will bring Israel victory. He will want him to come and play music because it lifts his spirits, not because it reminds him of why he's jealous. And so that is what we have to do. We have to say, you know, this is not how I should be feeling. What I should be feeling is this. And so I'm going to starve that feeling. I'm not going to give it fuel. And instead, I'm going to fuel the thing that I want to be feeling, that I should be feeling. And eventually, if I will starve one and feed the other, then the one that I starve will eventually die, and the one that I feed will eventually grow. And then I will just automatically not only feel what I am feeling, I won't feel that anymore and I will feel the right thing, but I'll also want to do the right thing. And so remember I said that the feelings influence the actions. And so if we can change our feelings, then we can change our reactions towards them. And the way that we change our feelings is by telling ourselves, by using our thoughts to tell our heart what we should be feeling, right? So we stop a minute and think, should I be feeling this? And then if we should not be feeling this, then we tell ourselves, what should we be feeling? And then once our thoughts have changed our feelings, then our feelings will change our actions. If we don't do this, if we don't replace it, if we just say, don't feel that, that's wrong. Don't feel that. That's not okay. You shouldn't be feeling that way towards him. And we don't replace it with the proper feeling, then all we're going to be doing is continuously saying, stop being jealous towards him. He doesn't deserve that. Stop being jealous. And then you're never going, nothing is ever going to change, because eventually you're not going to be able to suppress that feeling anymore, because all you've done is starve yourself. What happens if you never, ever feed yourself anything good? If you just say, I'm not going to eat that ice cream, not going to eat that candy bar, but then you don't give yourself something else that you like that might be healthy. So, okay, I'm not going to feed myself that. I'm going to feed myself, you know, protein and fruits and vegetables. And I like those things. They taste good because I can make them like this and whatever. If you will do that, then you're okay. But if you just continuously say, don't eat that sweet thing, and you don't replace it with fruit or honey or something that is, you know, more appropriate, then you're just going to eventually say, never mind, I'm eating the candy bar. And so it's the same thing with our sin. If we just try to starve it, eventually we're not going to be able to suppress that anymore. Jesus talks about this kind of scenario in Matthew 12, 43 to 45. And he says, when an unclean spirit goes out of a man, he goes through dry places seeking for a place to rest, and he finds nowhere else to go. So he says, whenever an unclean spirit comes out of a person, sometimes he can't find anywhere else to go. And so he says, I will return to the house from which I came. And then when he goes back to that house and finds it empty, swept, and put in order, he goes back and then he takes with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter and they all dwell there. And so the last state of the man is worse than the first. And so this is the same situation of what we're talking about, is if you dismiss this evil thought, but you don't replace it with anything, then you just sweep your house clean, the house being your body. It's just rid of the evil things, but it doesn't have any good things to replace it. And so in that situation, you know, maybe you've rid yourself of that one evil thing, but since you're empty, eventually that evil thing is going to come back in, that evil thought or that evil feeling, and then it might bring with it more evil feelings. And so instead of just feeling jealous, you're going to feel hatred. And instead of just feeling hatred, then you're going to want power. Then you're going to, all these different things are going to come in with this evil thing if you don't replace it. And so that is our job, is we must replace it. That's almost or maybe more important than ridding yourself of the evil thing, is to add in good things. I know as far as talking about a diet, sometimes it's easier for me to add in good things than it is for me to take away bad things. And so instead of telling myself I can't have that bad thing, I just say, you know, I like this other thing and it's sweet. Why don't I just eat that instead? And that doesn't bother me. So replace it with the right thing. In order to do that, we have to focus on the right things. We have to rid ourselves of the bad and then focus on all of the things that we should be feeling. And so in Philippians 4:8, it says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's anything of virtue or anything worth praising, meditate on these things. Meditate on them. Think about what is the truth of this situation. I need to remove my emotion and just tell myself the truth. What's the truth? What is something honorable about this situation? What is fair? What is pure, right, innocent, good? What is lovely? What can I love about this? You know, maybe I don't like these things, but what can I love about this? What is worth saying out loud? Worth reporting to others? What is virtuous? What is worthy of praise? And just think about all of those things and quit thinking about how you're jealous and you're mad and they do all of these things. You know, when I was saying earlier about David, Saul used to love David and now he doesn't because he's gotten jealous. I think this happens a lot of times in marriage. We focus on the fact that our husband isn't meeting a need or he's doing something that we don't like. And it grows until we've decided we don't like him anymore. We don't want to be married to him anymore. And I'm not saying in every single situation, but many times if we will stop focusing on the thing that we hate, that we are upset about, and remind ourselves, hey, I used to love this guy. Why did I love him? What made me love this person in the first place? What have I seen since I fell in love with him in the very first place that has made me love him since that time? And then focus on those things. And then every time that you are thinking, you know, I hate that about him. Oh, I hate it when he does that. That makes me so upset. Why does he treat me that way? He doesn't treat me well. Instead of doing that, as soon as that thought pops in your mind and you're thinking, why does he do that? I hate that. Say, I do hate that. I do. But I also love a lot of things about him, you know, and so I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to try to think about what else did he do, though, yesterday that I did love? You know, maybe right this second, he's not doing something wonderful, but what do I do? What do I love? You know, when you don't focus on the thing that you hate and let it grow until you decide you don't like them and you want to leave, focus on the things that you do love so that you can remind yourself that you do like them and you don't want to leave, right? That just makes sense. Whatever we feed will grow the strongest and it will win. So that's the first thing. But if upon reflection, you realize, no, there's nothing wrong with what I feel. What I feel is the correct feeling. I should feel like this. There are times that you should feel jealous. If another woman is calling your husband every day on his way home from work and he's telling her all about his day, or God forbid he's sleeping with her, then you're jealous, right? That is a righteous feeling. But does that mean, now that you've established, yeah, it's right for me to be jealous, I should be jealous, does that mean you just give full vent to your jealousy or to your anger or your lust or your greed or your selfishness or whatever the case may be? Does it just mean you just give full vent to that? No. Genesis 4, 6 to 7, God tells Cain this. And whenever he's jealous of his brother Abel and he wants to kill him, God says, why are you angry? Why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do well, sin crouches at your door. Its desire is to have you, but you must master it. So he's saying, you better get a hold of your sin. You can't give full vent to these feelings. You need to change right now. And then in Psalm 4 to 5, it says, be angry and do not sin. So he's like, okay, you have righteous anger. Fine. But don't sin in that anger. Meditate within your heart on your bed and be still. So he's like, think about it for a minute. Be still. Don't react. If you're angry, then you think about why you're angry, but don't do anything about it. Offer the sacrifice of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. Why is he saying sacrifice of righteousness? Because not to act on that anger is a sacrifice. To kill that reaction, that is a sacrifice. Because we want to do this thing, but we're suppressing it. And we're putting our faith in God instead. And so we can be angry, but it doesn't mean that our reaction to it needs to be given full vent. In Proverbs 29:11, it says, a fool vents all of his feelings, but a wise man holds them back. So just because we realize we're right, you know, we should be jealous, this woman needs to butt out of my marriage, and this man needs to get back to his house and do what he's supposed to do, then, and that's all right feeling, then your reaction to it cannot be to go over to her house and, you know, slash her tires and cause a scene or beat her up or kill somebody. You know, these are not reactions that are okay. So we're not redirecting our feelings now, we're redirecting our reaction to them. We are trying to find a more constructive way to handle this. And sometimes we can just stop and think, you know, meditate in your bed and be still, and then you can think of a better way to handle it. But sometimes you're just too caught up in it. Your emotions are too strong and you cannot think of a better way to handle it. And that's when you go to a friend who loves you and will say to you, you know, you're not wrong for feeling that way. I would feel that way and everyone else would feel like that. Like, that's an okay feeling to have. But I'm pretty sure you don't need to go over there to her house, or I'm pretty sure you don't need to kill your husband. So let's figure out a better way to handle this. And then you brainstorm and you figure out a way to deal with it better. We just have to make a decision right off that we're not going to react until we have either changed our feelings or our reaction to them, found a better way to handle it. And in the beginning, it may feel like you're redirecting yourself like 24/7. You know, it's like every 5 seconds, this thought is popping into your head and you're having to say, don't think that. That's not the right way to think. You need to think this. That's not the right way to feel. You need to feel like this. That's not the right answer. You need to do it this way. But eventually, after you do that over and over and over again, eventually you won't have to work so hard at it. And the distance between the, you know, redirecting will come further and further out until finally you've won the battle. Until eventually you don't have to do that anymore. You just don't feel like that anymore. Or you just don't want to do that thing anymore. You actually want to stay with your husband. You know, you don't want to divorce him anymore. You actually don't hate him anymore. You love him now. You know, those things eventually come, but you have to keep training yourself. In Proverbs 16:1-3, it says, "The preparations of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. All the ways of man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits." And then that's when he says also, "Commit your works to the Lord and your thoughts will be established." So he's saying, you might think that this is the right thing and you have said to yourself that this is right, but it might not be right to God. So you need to stop and evaluate and then do what God says to do, and God will help you think the right way about it. I know there was something that I'd prayed about at one point, and I really thought that I was right about it, but I also knew that it was causing contention between me and my husband. And so I just said, God, please help us to feel the same way about this. You know, I don't know what to do about this situation, and so help us to feel the same way about it. And then I really didn't think about it again. And I would pray that often, but then I just didn't really think about it. And eventually one day I realized, oh, I don't feel the same way as I used to. God has established my thoughts and now I have different feelings. And so, you know, sometimes it doesn't require a lot of thought and God does that for us. And sometimes it does require a lot of thought, but either way, he will establish our thoughts if we will just commit to do the right thing. Don't get discouraged if it takes a little bit. Sometimes it's a process. And so we just need to decide that we're going to do what's right. And then in the end, reason will prevail if we just stick with it. In 1 Corinthians 10:13, it says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, and he won't allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation, he will give you a way to escape, that you will be able to bear it." And so don't feel guilty for feeling the way that every other man in the world feels. Just decide, no, I know that this is a common temptation to lots of people, but I'm still going to get a hold of it. I'm not going to let this, rule over me. And know to yourself that God is never going to give you, you know, two wrong options. He's always going to give you a way out. He's never going to let you be, you know, in a situation where you don't have a choice but to do something sinful. Okay. I don't know about you, but I used to watch those Lifetime movies all the time where, like, you know, it's a situation where, like, domestic violence or something, they would have a situation like that. And I realized that these people are programming me to make me want that woman to kill her husband. It's like they make you think she has no other option but to stay there and get beat every single day, or to leave, you know, or to kill him. You know, it's like there's no way for her to be safe otherwise, you know. And it's like, God's never going to give us that situation where no matter what, our options are just both wrong. Now, we may not feel like all of our options are good options. We may feel like some of them are bad options, but they're not going to be sinful options. He's never going to give us only sinful options. He'll always give us a way that is good and right and true that we can get out of this. And so we just need to think about whatever that thing is, and get control of the situation. And then in 1 Peter 5:8-10, it says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking to whom he may devour. So resist him. Be steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same suffering you are experienced has been experienced by the other brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Jesus Christ, after you've suffered for a while, may he perfect you, establish you, strengthen you, and settle you." So don't be discouraged. It may be a while of suffering through this, you know, continuous redirecting, but eventually God will perfect this situation. He will establish you and give you some steady ground to stand on. He'll give you strength and give you peace. And so, that's all we're going to do of chapter 19. I wanted to do 19 and 20 together, and then I decided I really, really wanted to focus on this battle that Saul keeps having and has now lost, because I think we all feel this, and I wanted us to be able to, you know, say, how do I not end up in this situation? And so I hope that I've given you a few tools to use that you can, you know, not be in the same situation that he is and eventually lose the battle. Just make sure that you starve the things that are wrong, either the wrong feelings, the wrong thoughts, or the wrong reaction, and then feed the right one. Don't just wipe yourself empty so that, you know, suppressing all of those things, telling yourself to stop it, and then never telling yourself what to do. Because if you do that, you will lose that battle. Eventually, your willpower will not be strong enough. And so then you'll feel like a failure. And so, you know, just feed the right things. Tell yourself, what does God want me to do? And then continuously focus on that until you've redirected yourself enough that it becomes natural. That is the best advice that I can give you. If you have other ideas, then feel free to put them in the comments. I'd love to hear ideas of how to overcome your emotions. And by the way, I'm not talking about bad emotions or negative emotions. I'm talking about sinful emotions, you know, things that God doesn't approve of, not just that I don't want to feel this, or, you know, people might think that I shouldn't feel this, or I feel bad for feeling this. No, we need to see, is it correct in God's eyes or not? And so that's what I'm talking about. So I hope that this has been beneficial to you today. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, because we're going to continue on and see what happens to David, whether Saul succeeds in killing him or not. And so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss that next episode. And then if you would like these studies in the written form, where you can read the scriptures for yourself and you can go into a deeper study, then subscribe to my Substack at livethroughjesus.substack.com. You'll have to become a paid subscriber in order to get the lessons, and that is only $6 a month or $60 a year if you do that. And with that subscription, you will get access to all the previous Bible studies that we've done. So beginning in Deuteronomy with the Ten Commandments, and then the rest of Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, Samuel, Saul, and now David. And You can just go to the tabs at the top, pick whichever Bible study you want to do, click on it. Every single lesson is there. And then also, so are the video teachings that I'm doing here. Those are there for free. And so that's a good way to study either by yourself or with a group. If you study by yourself, you can at least click on those Bible verses and they're linked. And so it's quick for you. You can do whatever version of the Bible you want to, several different versions, study in that way. That's a deeper study. And then when you do it with a Bible study group, it's much cheaper than buying a book because you can just get one subscription and then print out all your materials. So if you'd like to do that, I would love for you to join me in Bible study in that way. Also, if you don't want to become a paid subscriber, I would love for you to at least become a free subscriber on Substack because I can give you just a short version without the study material of just what can we learn from this lesson? You know, how can we apply this to our lives? And I also teach that on a separate YouTube and podcast channel, and it's just called Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions. And so I teach the blog post as a devotion. And it's just like, you know, 10 to 20 minutes, much quicker than these where we're not studying, but we're just getting some application. And so, you know, go and become a free subscriber where you can get it as a blog post sent to you in your email box, or go to Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions on YouTube or podcast, and you can listen to that there. So lots of options to stay connected with me and study the Bible. So anyway, that's all I have for you today, and I'll see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day.